Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It is the 23rd day of February, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump into The Horn chat room. That's all you got to do. Just to pick out a screen name, a password there at the tab that says chat room. Jump right in where you'll be greeted immediately by Anatole, Don from Central PA, Hippie 2, Jug of Punch, Jules, Steve from Georgistan, and VT Blom. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator who's apparently getting a break from both rain and mosquitoes, has in fact decided to fold space and become man cave. Welcome, Hippie 2, to your first chat room experience. Be gentle, everybody. Be gentle. This is a listener supported operation, of course. We try to raise $200 every evening to keep things going. And that means sometimes we've got a little more, sometimes we've got a little less. We started out with less yesterday, only $175 to go, but we ended up at $105 to go at the end of the evening. And that went down over the course of the evening, thanks, among others, to our subscriber, Philip, over in Maryland. And we wound up at only $60 to go. So we've got $260 to raise this evening. One at 260, two at 130, four at 65, eight at 3250, 16 at 17 and a quarter, maybe. I don't know. The ciphering, you know, it's not my strong suit. Yep. But anyway, also 10 at 23 or 23 at 10, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you prefer, and you know, that's the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And we certainly need and would welcome this particular evening, because the end of the month is kind of tough. We both need and would welcome new subscribers. $10 a month works out to about 16 cents a program or something over the course of a year. Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be just wonderful. And in point of fact, all you got to do is check that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And so that's where we find ourselves. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, that works too. And Boss Man Wayne handles that end of it. The mailing address is The Horn, checks and money orders. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WP. 25801. And do please remember, don't put Bob Kincaid on any of those, because I never see him. It's not about Bob Kincaid. It's about keeping the horn on the air. Okay? That's all the stuff that Boss Man Wayne does when he leaves. If he knows there's mail, he'll leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck, and all he has to take with him is one of those old, long iron stakes that they use to, like, hold the embankments in place, and you can just in case he runs into the Grand Kleagle or the Exalted Cyclops or the Noble Pissant or whatever it is of the clan. Jesus, I remain amazed. So that's where we find ourselves as we begin the this particular thorn in the side Thursday. We reserve Thursdays for those moments that kind of make you go, oh, yeah, ow, yeah, thorn in the side, right? Right. And when it comes to thorn in the sides, you know, I've got this growing list. This growing list of things we shouldn't be talking about right now. I alluded to it yesterday evening. You know, there's no getting around the fact that had some people not answered on the November 8th ballot, 2 + 2 equals Jesus Christ, goddamn Hillary Clinton, Benghazi emails, private server, oh, Goldman Sachs speeches, do oppression, math is bad, math oppresses me. We wouldn't be talking about the fact that we're probably going to have a return or an uptick, you know, kind of like the uptick in anti-Semitism, bomb threats against Jewish community centers, threats against Muslims and Islamic centers. You know, we probably won't, because we're going to have an uptick now in little TG kids getting the shit kicked out of them because they have to use the bathroom just like other human beings when they go to school. But, you know, the Comrade Kumquat's education secretary, Betsy DeVos, who has never had any experience whatsoever with public education or really much with education at all. I mean, you know, born on third, thinking she hit a triple, member of the Lucky Sperm Club. And we're going to roll back protections for TG kids in schools. And we shouldn't be talking about that. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We really shouldn't. We shouldn't be talking about that. We should not, by any stretch of the imagination, we shouldn't be talking about that. You know, if a few more people had gotten something right than, say, wrong, we wouldn't be talking about that. I say that because of some rather surprising numbers that came out of an editorial I read earlier today. Again, math, not my strong suit. But fortunately for me, it doesn't have to be because it's the strong suit of other people. A person by the name of Steve Phillips penned an op-ed piece in the New York Times. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, and he's authored a new book called Brown is the New White, How the Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority. He's also the founder of an organization called Democracy in Color. And he makes a compelling argument on the op-ed pages of the New York Times. That's really kind of painful. To a certain extent, though, it also is it's validating. Because Steve Phillips makes the argument that the Democratic Party, as it tries to figure out what went wrong in 2016, would do well not to take the sucker bet and go running off chasing the people who got in bed, you know, those economically anxious white folks who got in bed with the Klan, the neo-Nazis, and the xenophobes, and the bigots, and the misogynists, and the racists, and yada, 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 to give the Clementine Caligula his victory. And just as a member of the Federal Election Commission wrote a couple of days ago, even though he's blathered about it quite a bit, the Tangerine Tiberius has yet to put forward an iota of evidence of the massive voter fraud that would have actually given him the popular vote victory. You know, because he's a liar. Lying is what he does best. No, instead, Steve Phillips argues, and he uses as his jumping off point, he says, the Democratic National Committee will choose its next leader on Saturday, and when it does, it should choose a leader who will resist the pressure to pursue the wrong white people. Hundreds of articles have been written about the imperative of attracting more support from white working class voters who supported Barack Obama in 2012, but then bolted to back. Well, you know, the peachy Pasha. And then he backs up his argument, and it's a fascinating argument. And it also plays into the overall theme of this Thorn in the Side Thursday, to wit, things we shouldn't have to be talking about right now in, say, February of 2017. Let's establish some ground rules before I start getting the emails. Oh, goddamn Hillary! The devil! Yeah, before you start sending those, let's establish some ground rules. Hillary Clinton should never have been the nominee of the Democratic Party in 2016. No, not because she done stole the nomination from Bernie, who didn't have near as many votes as Hillary did. No. Under the rules of the game, she won the nomination. She should not have been the candidate because she should never have run. She should never have run because she got her ass pasted in 2008. She should never have run because the right wing had been waiting and begging and pleading for her to run for 25 fucking years. Waiting for her, yearning for her, aching for her. A 25-year, and it takes a special brand of hubris not to recognize that a 25-year-long disinformation campaign is going to have a pretty deleterious effect. She never should have run. So I hope that maybe that's a little bit of a panacea to the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry. She never should have run. And had they had any of the big money boys been paying attention, somebody would have pulled her aside and said, Hills, ain't gonna work. But they didn't. And we're here. But as Steve Phillips makes clear in his op-ed in the New York Times, how we got here is not quite as easy to understand as the some members of the for-profit media would have you believe. No, not at all. As he notes, the far more important and largely untold story of the election is that more Obama voters defected to third and fourth party candidates than the number who supported Mr. Trump. Hear that again. Maybe get it in a tattoo. More Obama voters defected to third and fourth party candidates, and by fourth party candidates, of course, we mean Jilly Jill, because the Greens aren't even a third party. than the number who supported Mr. Trump. That is the white flight that should most concern the next DNC chairman, because those voters make up a more promising way to reclaim the White House. The way to win them back is by being more progressive, not less. There's the tattoo. And you know, that's one that progressives who got the question right on November 8th can agree with progressives who got the question wrong on November 8th on. The way to win is by being more progressive, not less. So far, so good, right? Then Steve Phillips, with what I presume to be his tongue planted firmly in his cheek, says, to be clear, all white voters matter. Yes, don't they? Don't they just? They do. They do. Oh, and by the way, this is just an aside. This is just one of those things where I can... Sometimes it's a struggle when I'm out at a public place not to, just... I saw a picture of Melanoma and Ivanka up on the up at the top of the National Enquirer, that trusted news source, that trusted alternative news source. And it said something like, Malaria and Ivanka, their heartbreaks, their dignified struggles with hardship, their return of grace to the White House. Grace in National Enquirer speak, of course, meaning their return of whiteness to the White House. But anyway. I didn't kick the magazine rack, and I was not dragged out of the store or anything. So, yay me! To be clear, all white voters matter. But Democrats must make tough, data-driven decisions about how to prioritize their work. Right now, too many are using bad math and faulty logic to push the party to chase the wrong segment of white voters. For example, Guy Cecil, who spent nearly $200 million as head of the progressive super PAC Priorities USA, urged the party to rebuild trust with the millions of white voters who voted for President Obama and Donald Trump. The math, Steve Phillips says, underlying that conclusion is incorrect. Mr. Trump picked up not millions, but only 784,000 white votes in the 10 battleground states he won by single digits. And it misses the bigger and more fixable problem of white Democratic defections to third and fourth party candidates. Again, fourth party meaning Jill. And then he goes granular into the data. Hillary Clinton lost the decisive states of Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan by 77,744 votes. The number of Democratic votes dropped significantly from 2012 levels, and the Republican total increased by about 440,000 votes. That's Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. The third and fourth party surge, however, was larger than the Republican growth. 503,000 more people chose Libertarian or Greens than had done so in 2012. When you look at the white vote in those states, the picture is even more stark. Remember, the theme of this Thorn in the Side Thursday is things we shouldn't be having to have to be talking about, but are. He looks at Wisconsin. The devil got 193,000 fewer white votes than Obama got in 2012. On the other hand, however, Trump only got 9,000 more white votes than Mitt Romney. So, doing his ciphering, Mr. Phillips asks, what happened to the 184,000 other Wisconsin white folks' votes? That's 184,000 little Where's Waldo hats. Well, they went to third and fourth parties. That's where they went. Together, Gary Where's Aleppo Johnson and Silly Jilly got 100,000 more white votes than they did in 2012. It's largely the same story in Michigan. Then there's Pennsylvania, where despite all her attempts to use her special accent in black churches and whatnot, black Pennsylvanians weren't buying. This goes back to something Todd was talking about a couple of nights ago, when he said that he realized the fix was in when he started seeing black voters in Philly saying, mm-mm, not her. In Pennsylvania, she did better than Obama did in 2012 with white folks. But still, she lost Pennsylvania by 44,000 votes and 130,000 black voters just stayed home. In other words, had they, you can make the argument that she probably won, would have won by three times as many votes as she lost by, had those voters simply turned out. Why didn't they turn out? Well, at one point, voter suppression. That's a part of it. The right wing made a lot of noise about how they were going to try to intimidate black voters and keep them from voting. And there's no doubt that within a sample size of 130,000, there had to have been an impact somewhere along the way. All of this sort of puts the lie, because it's what he does best, puts the lie to the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's claim that if the illegal voters had been kept from voting, he would have won going away. It's simply not true. If voters who had previously voted in 2012 just came out, it wouldn't have been a contest. And Steve Phillips sees it the same way. If Democrats had stemmed the defections of white voters to the Libertarian or Green parties, they would have won Michigan and Wisconsin. And had they also inspired African Americans in Pennsylvania, Mrs. Clinton would be president. And then, I mean, this again, this was published on the 21st, 2 days ago. And it deserves your considered attention, because it's got a lot of wisdom in it. There are no wasted words. If progressive whites are defecting because they are uninspired by Democrats, moving further to the right will only deepen their disillusionment. But But if the next DNC chairman can win them back, the country's demographic trends will tilt the field in Democrats' favor. As Mrs. Clinton's popular vote margin showed, there is still a new American majority made up of a meaningful minority of whites and an overwhelming majority of minorities. Not only is there little evidence that Democrats can do significantly better with those white working class voters who are susceptible to messages laced with racism and sexism, but that sector of the electorate will continue to shrink in the coming years. In other words, chasing them is chasing an unavoidably diminishing return. In 2016, nearly half, and that's 46%, he notes, of all Democratic votes were not white. In the next 4 years, 10 million more people of color will be added to the population. That's compared to just 1.5 million more white folks. This is the natural progress of things. Ultimately, Steve Phillips' argument is that Keith Ellison should be the person elected to run the DNC. I share his sentiment. Because of what Mr. Phillips calls his proven record of engaging core Democratic voters rather than chasing the elusive conservative whites. But moreover, he says, whoever prevails as chairman must resist the pressure to follow an uninformed and ill-fated quest for winning over conservative white working class voters in the Midwest. The solution for Democrats is not to chase Trump defectors. The path to victory involves re-inspiring those whites who drifted to third party, fourth party candidates, and then focusing on the ample opportunities in the Southwest and the South. Were I having a conversation with Mr. Phillips, I would suggest that I agree with his thesis, but I think it a little bit short-sighted not to take into account the active voter suppression that is bad and only going to get worse in the South and Southwest. He closes with another shocking reality. Mrs. Clinton came closer to winning Texas. And this is a wow moment. Mrs. Clinton came closer to winning Texas than she did to winning Iowa. She did better in Arizona, Georgia, and Florida than she did in Ohio. The electoral action for Democrats may have once been in the Rust Belt, but it's now moving west and south. I haven't read anything that trenchant in terms of an understanding of the disaster that struck us on November 8th in quite some time. That may be the best analysis that I've read of the disaster that befell this once great nation on November the 8th. So the question becomes one of how do you get those third and fourth party white folks to get the 2+2 question right in 2020. And Mr. Phillips seems to be of the opinion that the guy who can do that is Keith Ellison. But implicit in his argument also is the fact that, yeah, Howard Dean was onto something with his 50-state strategy. If he says the fight is moving south and west, he's talking about states where the Democratic Party barely even competes. He's talking about states where the Democratic Party is moribund. Whether it be South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, there are not vibrant Democratic Party organizations in any of those states. And finding progressive candidates in there is probably even more difficult. So I would suggest that his analysis is probably isolated to presidential politics and not necessarily congressional politics. Senate races are statewide. They're somewhat different than House races. House races and state legislatures are an entirely different animal because they are so thoroughly subject to and subjected to gerrymandering that's gone on for near 20 years, 25 maybe. Now, like I said, things that we shouldn't be talking about. Well, the first thing on the list was, the potty issue. They didn't just fail that, they got a zero. Made worse by the fact that that the declaration was made that the president, by Spicer, the president thinks that this is clearly a state's rights issue. Wrong accent, I know. And Lord Jesus God Almighty, in 2017, there is no bigger dog whistle than states' rights. You know, just like voter ID is a states' rights issue. Just like they're still arguing that who can marry whom is a states' rights issue. And whether or not some shitty Christian pizza shop has to do business with the homos is a states' rights issue. Because everybody knows that when a Republican says states' rights, what he means to do is say, remember the good old days when those people knew their place? Whether those people be people of color, immigrants, women, gays, trans people, remember when they knew to stay in the shadows? Remember when they knew not to upset the lily white apple cart? States' rights. Mm-hmm. Things we would not be talking about. Things we should not have to be talking about. Now, if you are a long-time listener, or even frequent listener, to this program, you know that we have talked for quite some time, especially in the context of mountaintop removal, but not exclusively in that context, about particulates. I never set out to make this program a program that would talk about such things. It's just that, you know, when you're a hillbilly in the sacrifice zone, you get to learn new words. And fine and ultra-fine particulate matter, that was one of the new things I got to learn about. Because those are, in large part, the things that are killing hillbillies who don't get a check from the coal industry, who just happen to live near mountaintop removal hellscapes, toxic waste sites, where the dust from the massive, you know, to the tune of roughly one Hiroshima every 9 days or so. That's how much explosive force is used in Appalachia. And we breathe that stuff. Well, Scott Pruitt is now in charge of the EPA. You know, the job-killing EPA that ran that war on poor, pitiful, little undefended coal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not just bringing back coal. That's on the list. It's every other form of pollution. Good God, there's, 7,000 emails banging around out there that just got released a little too late to make it to the confirmation party for Scott Pruitt. That corrupt little fuck is up to his eyeballs in hydrocarbons. To the point that he didn't even bother writing his own stuff when he was AG of Oklahoma. He just let the hydrocarbon industry write his stuff, and then he highlighted and copied and pasted, and bang, it was the opinion of the Attorney General. Now, back when he was campaigning, Marcus Aurelius said that the Clean Air Act was holding America back from being able to have a wonderful manufacturing economy. Mm-hmm. Well, turns out that's going to have real consequences. Again, things we shouldn't have to be talking about, but we do. Yep. Because, you know, 2 + 2 equals Clinton Dynasty! Oh my God! We've talked a little bit here about the possibility that there may be something medically wrong with Trump's brain. There certainly seems to be a rather considerable amount of objective evidence to support the assertion. But a lot of people may have something wrong with their brain. And it has a lot to do with two things. The use of coal and the exhaust that comes off of motor vehicles. The article you want, you'll find at the Los Angeles Times. And it actually goes back to the end of January and the beginning of February in an article by Melissa Healy. The surprising link, this is the headline, the surprising link between air pollution and Alzheimer's disease. This story broke at about the same time that the birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bagger, bircher, booger eater, bagger, Trumpansy Congress was getting rid of the stream protection rule. Now they're getting ready to go after the Clean Air Act more generally. Moreover, in that article, a physician epidemiologist named Dr. Jiuquan Chen said, if people in the current administration are trying to reduce the cost of treating diseases, including dementia, then they should know that relaxing the Clean Air Act regulations will do the opposite. A brand new 11-year-long epidemiological study has been released in Nature, or in Translational Psychiatry, a journal from the Nature organization. It turns out that particulates can go straight from the nose to the brain. Now, I had known, and science has known, for instance, that when a particulate is inhaled, it can go to the lungs, and that it can translate past, it can pass through the heart-lung barrier and affect heart health, and it can also go through the blood-brain barrier and affect brain function. But now they're saying it you don't have to do that. It goes straight from the nose to the brain. I don't know, kind of in the same way that the ancient embalmers in merry old Egypt used to use a little long-handled spoon to scoop out the pharaoh's brain and put it in one of those canopic jars for its, you know, journey to the afterlife. I guess pharaohs and were like jigsaw puzzles for the gods to put back together again. Take out wrenched ankle. Ha, ha, ha. It turns out that, for instance, older women who breathe air pollution that exceeds the EPA standard for what are called fine particles, that's called PM2.5. There are standards for PM10, which are bigger, and PM2.5, which are smaller, and there are no standards whatsoever for what are called ultrafines. To give you some idea of size, a PM2.5 particle is 1/20th the width of a human hair. An ultrafine is 1/100th the width of a human hair. Professor Caleb Finch is a co-author of the epidemiological study. Professor Finch said, microscopic particles generated by fossil fuels get into our body directly through the nose into the brain. Cells in the brain treat these particles as invaders and react with inflammatory responses, which over the course of time appear to exacerbate and promote Alzheimer's disease. There was another study out there last month that said living close to heavy traffic is associated with a higher incidence of dementia. And we've already established that living close to the particulate toxins that come off of mountaintop removal sites is bad for the brain, bad for the heart, bad for the lungs, bad for everything in your body. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Coal keeps the lights on. Up in Canada, some scientists up there said that found out that if you live within 160 feet of a high traffic road, you're 7% more likely to develop dementia than people who live about 1,000 feet away from busy roads. Again, things we shouldn't have to be talking about. Dr. Chen isn't giving up. Dr. Chen said it is really a policymaker's responsibility to make sure that the air everyone breathes is clean and safe. This is a time when everyone needs to speak up, including scientists. Good. Do speak up, please. But do so understanding that this administration is at war with science. Something that I would not be saying on the 23rd of February, 2017, had a number of people simply gotten that little math question right. But instead, you know, 2 plus 2 equals
the devil!
So we get Trump. And knowing this, and it makes you wonder what kind of misanthropic monsters we're talking about when knowing this, well, they don't know it, they deny it, but knowing this, they want more blasting. They want more particulates. They want more dust. They want more toxins. They want more sickness. They want more death. And I will take a moment to say this is part of what makes the work we do and the work that you help do with the AIC Act all the more important. Because the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act is the only bill in Congress right now that pushes the realities that we're talking about here. If you have, and I know there are a number who have, if you have ever watched someone sink into the depths of dementia, you know what a horror it is. What a heartbreak it is. What an agony it is. And the idea that these godforsaken freaks want more of it and not less is just disgusting. But beyond being disgusting, it is further proof that they are actively engaged in trying to personally harm you. You know, I read some, and I do it late at night, on the weekends, that sort of thing. And I like to read, when I'm reading for pleasure, things that aren't necessarily immediately related to this program or the news. There's only one problem. It always seems to loop back around to the current reality. One of my favorite books is Joseph Heller's Catch-22. Yossarian couldn't be happy, even though the Texan didn't want him to be, because outside the hospital there was still nothing funny going on. The only thing going on was a war, and no one seemed to notice but Yossarian and Dunbar. And when Yossarian tried to remind people, they drew away from him and thought he was crazy. Even Clevenger, who should have known better but didn't, had told him he was crazy the last time they'd seen each other, which was just before Yossarian had fled into the hospital. Clevenger had stared at him with apoplectic rage and indignation, and, clawing the table with both hands, had shouted, "You're crazy!" "Clevenger, what do you want from people?" Dunbar had replied wearily above the noises of the officers' club. "I'm not joking," Clevenger persisted. "They're trying to kill me," Yossarian told him calmly. "No one's trying to kill you," Clevenger cried. Then why are they shooting at me? Yossarian asked. They're shooting at everyone, Clevenger answered. They're trying to kill everyone. And what difference does that make? Because, see, Yossarian understood. The fact that they were trying to kill everyone did not change the fact that they were trying to kill him. And so I read that, and there are passages in Catch-22 that are roll you out of your chair laughing funny. They're trying to kill me, he says. And it strikes me that the same thing is applicable here. The fact that these Republicans are trying to kill anybody does not in any wise diminish the fact that they're trying to kill you. And they're trying to kill me. And they're trying to kill us. Per that Canadian study, I'm guessing that by virtue of height, that gaudy, tacky penthouse in Trump Tower is more than 1,000 feet from the busy road that it, the street that it, avenue, boulevard, parkway that it sits on. I'm guessing the same applies to that tacky pile of bricks down at Mar-a-Lago. But it doesn't apply to somebody upon whom great clouds of toxic dust boils in a holler in southern West Virginia. And it doesn't apply to housing along busy roads in urban centers all over the country. And you know what? We shouldn't be having to talk about the fact that they're going to try harder to kill you. But we do have to talk about that. Because they are. And right now, we're looking at a little under 4 years of them working at it every day, trying to kill more of us. And it becomes a question of how we try to prevent that, how we try to fight that, how we try to guard against it. And if we take as a jumping off point the editorial by Steve Phillips that I shared. Seems like we've got to figure out a way to teach a significant number of white folks that 2 plus 2 does in fact equal 4. It doesn't equal Goldman Sachs speeches! And it doesn't equal
the devil!
It just equals 4. How we do that? I'm not sure I know. If you do, I'd love to know it. Kim in New Jersey says, Dems win in 2020 only with Michelle. Trump wins in a true landslide if anyone else runs. I don't know that that's what the data suggest, at least based on what was in that editorial. I think there's a lot of potential good. There are several good potential candidates out there, and I don't know of anybody. I haven't heard anywhere that Michelle has the least bit of interest in running for president. I would be genuinely surprised if she did. 8 years of being called Michael, 8 years of being called a gorilla, 8 years of being told she should go and mate with gorillas. I wouldn't want to get up on that. No. Mm-mm. Randy says the biggest thing that's probably making us sick is the glyphosate and the other non-inert Roundup ingredients in our food. And now there's a possible link between Roundup and rising autism rates. The laboratory studies that would prove this are caught up in a legal catch-22, sort of like the marijuana studies are. I don't know that we can say that any one thing is poisoning us more than any other. It becomes a matter of ubiquity. There are a lot of poisons in our world that are ubiquitous and almost inescapable. How does a mother-to-be in the sacrifice zone of southern West Virginia avoid the dust that we know scientifically is going to give her an increased chance of giving birth to a baby with any number of birth defects? Does she wear a World War I gas mask everywhere she goes? Hell, you can barely get the miners underground to wear their respirators that actually will prevent them from getting black lung. You see the problem. Sure. Things we shouldn't have to be talking about. But somehow, we still wind up having to talk about them because of the aforementioned simple math problem. Oops. So that's just the beginning of Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is, of course, Conversation Radio, and we've had some Jim Dandies this week. We're trying to raise $260 this evening. We still have $260 to go. Hopefully that will not be $460 by tomorrow night. If we can take a bite out of it, please do. Let's take a bite out of it. Note coming in from Graham in Australia. Breaking. Hey, does this matter at all? FBI refused White House request to knock down recent Trump-Russia stories. The FBI, Dateline, Washington, CNN, the FBI rejected a recent White House request to publicly knock down media reports about communication between Donald Trump's associates and Russians known to U.S. intelligence during the 2016 presidential campaign. Multiple U.S. officials briefed on the matter, tell CNN. White House officials had sought the help of the Bureau and other agencies investigating the Russia matter to say that the reports were wrong and that there had been no contacts. Fake news, fake news. The reports of the contacts were first published by the New York Times and CNN on February 14th. The direct communications between the White House and the FBI were unusual because of decades-old restrictions on such contacts. Restrictions. You know, we don't need no stinking restrictions. Such a request from the White House is a violation of procedures that limit communication with the FBI on pending investigations. We don't need any procedures either. Does it matter? Yeah, it matters. The cynics among us can say that if that was Hillary Clinton, James Comey would be standing on the steps of the Senate screaming it as loud as he possibly could. Right? Yeah. But then again, that also falls under the general heading of things we wouldn't be talking about if people had gotten a simple math problem correct. Oh well. Oh, let's be fair. People in Wisconsin and Michigan. Okay, Pennsylvania too, because 2 + 2 = fuck it. I'm not going to vote. Yeah, that's a problem, too. So anyway, break time. Hopefully we'll get the fundraising started. I hate even talking about it. Jesus Christ, I do. But there you go. Oh, note coming in from Keith. Subject line, dementia. I've watched my dad day by day. And year by year, change. He was and is a short-tempered man, but he had his good side. We didn't know that years ago when he was a little forgetful and it was the onset of dementia. Now he knows a couple of us, but within a few minutes is asking who we are. He can tell you in detail things that happened in 1950, but can't tell you what he had for breakfast. My dad was a truck driver for 37 years. We have research that links long-term exposure to diesel fumes as being directly related to dementia. Yeah, we do. And we could try to do something about it. But because of that little math problem on November the 8th, the something we're going to do about it is not to make it better, but to make it worse. Wow, you hear those compression brakes? That's a diesel truck out on the highway, about 1,000 feet from the mansion here. So, yeah, let's take a break. This is the horn. Lines are open. This is Conversation Radio, listener supported. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Close my eyes, only for a we refuse to see.
Dust in the wind.
All we are is dust in the wind.
Yeah, I guess that was a fairly obvious choice from the DJ standpoint, but yeah, whatever. Make no mistake, we'd still be talking about particulate matter and its impact on human health had people answered the question right. But we'd be talking about finding solutions or maybe an executive order to maybe compel the EPA to develop standards for ultrafine particles. And not just PM10 and PM2.5, but PM1.0. Instead, we'll be lucky if the PM10 and PM2.5 standards survive the next year. Oh, well. Hey, look. Up there, in the far, frozen north, hopefully a thousand feet away from a major thoroughfare, it's Ron. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I want to say that is one of the best overproduced rock songs ever.
I love it. It's a wonderfully overproduced entire album.
Yep. That little rolling guitar in the background, it's just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful little riff.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm calling in because once again I have nothing to say, but I wanted to say it to you.
It's amazing how many things get said when you have nothing to say.
heard a wonderful line today from a guy I work with who's a few years younger than me, but absolutely brilliant. Guy's got a double engineering degree, loves minutiae, heavy into cybersecurity, did 20 years in the military. He's done 25 working with the firm I'm with now. And he can keep 400 balls in the air at once and remember stuff that he wrote 6 months ago that was incredibly detailed. And he said something to me today. He said, "This has been a wonderful day." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because I learned new things today. But then I realized I probably knew them already." And he had forgotten all about them. And as he was, I brought an article into him and we were chatting. And matter of fact, I brought in a book that I had as a training manual that I needed to study and understand, to pass ratings exams in the Navy. And this thing is fully 4 inches thick, double-sided, all about the theory of operation of vacuum tubes and transformers and Class A, Class B, Class AB audio amplifiers, Colpitts oscillators, etc. And he looks at it, and he went back at least 40 years. And I couldn't get that book out of his hands for about 2 hours. And he said, I learned so much today that I already knew and had forgotten. And I keep, it's probably a piss poor analogy, but most of the people that are arguing for, against, whatever, with respect to coal, environmentalism, Republican politics, Democratic politics, they already know all the answers, but apparently they've conveniently forgotten most of them.
Well, yeah, and I thought you were actually going to extrapolate onto a wider platform, Ron.
I'm a simple man, Bob.
Well, and you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd wants you to be a simple kind of man. Do things that you can know and understand. Wow, a Lynyrd Skynyrd reference. Bet there won't be another one of those on Progressive Radio tonight.
Did Lynyrd say that I don't understand all I know about it?
If he didn't, they.
Yeah.
If they didn't, they implied it.
That's always been my paraphrase of that.
So. But the business with the particulates, like the business with the, who can go where, go to the potty where.
Yeah.
We know. I think that the erosion of the civil rights of one leads to the erosion of the civil rights of all. But we've forgotten that we knew it, and I guess we forgot it on November 8th. Is that roughly when?
I think it probably started a bit before that, but it culminated on November the 8th.
I mean, back in the 19th century, at the time when Lincoln was in his ascendancy, there was a party that was called the Know-Nothings.
Yep. I've heard of them. I can't remember anything about them, but
most people think the Know-Nothings meant that they knew nothing. No, they were birthed out of like secret societies, so they were kind of Sergeant Schultz-y when it came to saying, "Well, you know, who's the head of your party? I know nothing," and they wouldn't tell you who was running things. They were rather a paranoid lot.
By the way, who is the head of the Republican Party right now?
Donald J. Goddamn Trump, that's who.
Really? I don't know if the Republican Party believes that. Or if he's just a figurehead that they can use until they get their agenda.
Well, I mean, he gets to make the major appointments like, chair of the RNC and stuff. I mean, the reason we're having an RNC chair election right now, or a DNC chair election right now, is because we don't have a party head, or, we don't have someone in power who is invested with the power to simply make the appointment, the way Barack Obama appointed Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Well, if Trump is the head of the party, why is it that he's only appointed about, or even nominated about 35 people out of the 500 or 600 that need to be approved by the Senate? But he's blaming the Democrats for not his appointments not going through.
I think the number was 592.
That's a softball, Bob.
Right, I know. And you know what? Sometimes you've just got to have the grace and the dignity to let him land in the catcher's mitt.
Sorry.
But I think the number is actually 592... 592 positions that the Trump administration hasn't even bothered nominating anyone for.
Yeah,
and they're real positions. It's not like assistant undersecretary for basket weaving by the Venezuelan Vestal Virgins. These are positions inside the Department of Justice, inside the Department of State, inside the EPA, inside, you know, NASA. And the point that you don't want to lose in all of this is not that those poor nominees are just sitting there with their nose pressed up against the frosty window panes of the Congress, of the Senate, waiting for confirmation. Those nominees don't exist at all, even a little bit. They haven't gotten around to it.
And he's had a fair list of high-profile people going, no, I don't think I want to work for you.
Yeah, and again, they're real jobs. I'm trying to find. Yeah. There's one in particular that kind of stands out, simply because it sounds so gosh darn sciencey and serious like. And I'll get there in a minute.
That was me swallowing something amber, Bob. Sorry for the noise.
How's Pappy?
Pappy doing just fine. My son still has a bottle of Pappy. I'm currently working on a bottle of Weller Reserve 10-year-old, which is more than adequate.
It sounds not shabby. I have been living the life sanitary for a while.
I understand.
So I'll have to live vicariously through you. No, I found the title. I found the title, Ron.
Ooh.
We do not have, nor have they not, has the Trump administration nominated anyone to be the Undersecretary of State for Arms Control.
Really? Is the current incumbent still there? Or is he vacated post?
I'm, you know, so many people were told to clean out their damn desks. I don't know. We do not have a nominee for the Environmental Protection Agency Assistant Administrator for Chemical Safety. Do the words methyl cyclone hexane methanol mean anything to you?
Right up there with West Virginia water.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. We're still down a director of the National Park Service. And just because the goddess of irony does not play beanbag, we also do not have, and I'm not kidding, and God Almighty, Ron, isn't this just a metaphor for the whole damn thing? We are still found wanting for an Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence.
Well, with this current administration, it's a bit of an oxymoron.
Well, I was going to say, if that didn't make you stick the straw, just bypass the glass and stick the straw in the bottle, I don't know what will.
Well, I have two or three old contacts that are still active working in Washington in the community, and they're just shaking their heads. You know, they're GS-12, GS-14s, well off. Up near the, well off in the sense of being a government, long-term government employee. A couple of them don't need to work anymore, but they're hanging in there because they think they might be able at some point to pass on some sane and sensible advice, because they've seen it all. They've been there, they've seen the elephant, and some of the, you know, right at the very top level, the generals, all two or three of the three stars that he's appointed, despite knowing more than all the generals, he picked three relatively good guys now. Flynn was a yo-yo, but the other guys he's got there, they're all going to push right back on him, or walk, one of the two, if he does something really bizarre.
Well, this latest guy was promised the ability to select his own staff, but they sort of started playing hopscotch when the question was put to them, does that mean he can throw racist Bannon off of the National Security Council, off the Principals Committee? I hear my the dog ate that answer.
Well, knowing the guy they picked, at least what I've read about him, I think he'd push fairly hard and probably get his way. Because the last thing Trump needs right now is a three-star who's already got a job in the Army, and he's going to continue to hold his rank and job in the Army, saying, to paraphrase an ex-candidate for that same job, this has turned into a shit sandwich. So I'm going to go back to my other job and go back to being the three-star
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Are the only people with sufficient knowledge to fill out a position in the Trump administration military brass?
You almost think they're being sort of pushed from behind to get in there and provide some adult supervision.
Well, I'm gonna let my paranoia hair down here for a minute.
Okay, as long as Dr. Strangelove does not come into the conversation.
Mein Führer, I convoke! Sorry, that's all there will be. I've been talking at some length about the shortcomings of the 25th Amendment insofar as it requires 9 members of the cabinet to certify that the president is unable to discharge his duties.
Yep.
And I came to that conclusion that there was a problem when I started thinking about lickspittles like Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III and Betsy, what's a school,
DeVos,
and Rexon Tillerson and Scott, no, let's have more poison Pruitt. It makes that chore of finding 9 cabinet members kind of tough.
Apparently, he's going to have to find at least another 9.
But then I got to thinking about the Secretary of Defense. And yes, he's problematic. He wanted him back during the previous administration. He was real upset because he didn't get to get his war on with the Iran.
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, that number 9 may be wrong. I'm not entirely certain. Cabinet level positions, 23. So maybe it's more like we need 12.
Yeah.
That's not helpful. But anyway,
it also raises the question of how long will it take to get a full cabinet to where the number is relevant.
Well,
or
even though
X percentage of the current cabinet, whatever that happens to be at the time.
Well, even though this current gang of losers keeps whining about how the Senate is holding, or the Democrats in the Senate are holding up nominations, the fact of the matter is, Barack Obama's cabinet wasn't filled out until mid-March,
yep.
So they can shut them up. But when you haven't even bothered to nominate more than 500 positions. Well, that's a thing, too. But here's my question. And this is not so much a reflection of reality, Ron, as it is a manifestation of my desire to find something resembling hope somewhere. Could it be that some of that military brass, being how they once stuck their hands in the air and promised to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic?
Yep. You remember that. If you've taken that oath, almost everybody who's taken it remembers it and understands what it means.
Well, do you think that if things get bad enough, maybe Mattis might be the guy to circulate the paragraph that says, "We the undersigned do hereby, pursuant to the 25th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, declare that the president is unfit to discharge the duties of his office, or unable to discharge the duties of his office?
In his capacity as a cabinet minister, possibly. As long as he's got stars on his shoulders, or thinks he has stars on his shoulders.
Well, I mean, he's retired.
Yeah, well, it's one of the jobs you never walk away from. So, yeah, he might be the guy. It sure as hell ain't going to be Betsy DeVos.
Maybe get a grizzled old shaven headed three stars on the shoulder board type like the national security advisor along with him.
They would command attention if they walked into the room, wouldn't they?
Well, you got to think that either one of those could look at racist Bannon and say, "Lieutenant, sit down and shut up."
Yeah. I'd like to find out if Bannon is actually still a reserve officer.
No. He's 65.
Oh, well, shit. That idea went out the window.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, after seven years as a commissioned officer, he couldn't rise past lieutenant.
Well, that's called the up or out rule.
And he couldn't make the up, right?
Yeah, you get two passes at promotion board, and on your second pass, you do not get promoted, you're gone.
Wow, that's pretty rough.
Pretty much assures that the people that do make it up there, for the most part, have their shit together.
Yeah, so he couldn't even make lieutenant commander.
He couldn't make 05, no.
Is that what that is, 05, Lieutenant Commander?
Yeah.
And then Commander's 06 and Captain's 07?
No. Lieutenant Commander is 04. Lieutenant is 03. Starts off...
Yeah, Ensign, Lieutenant Junior Grade, Lieutenant...
Yeah.
Lieutenant Commander's 4, Commander's 5, Captain's
6. 06, yeah.
But
once you get past, if you're at the two-star level, which is, I think, 09, there's usually a grade in there called Commodore in the Navy, anyway, that gets passed over. But once you're past two-star, I think you need congressional approval to get your third star.
So back to this list of people we don't have in that they haven't even bothered, because I mean I'm glad you raised this, because it speaks to an absent level of competence, or even, you know, paying attention. I want to share a few of the people we don't have nominees for. Ambassador, Afghanistan. Ambassador, Canada. Ambassador, Australia. I think we may have a nominee, or there's been talk of a nominee for ambassador to France. Nuclear power. Ambassador, India. Did I lose you there for a minute?
Briefly.
I don't know why.
Dr. Skype chimed in and said, please call in again.
Yeah, so we don't have an ambassador to India or Afghanistan.
Or Canada.
Or Canada. We don't have an ambassador to Saudi Arabia.
Where do we have? Let's go to the other side of the coin. Where do we have ambassadors?
It's a short list. We've got an ambassador to China. It's been announced. But, you know, and that's Terry Branstad. Bolivia, Austria, Belarus, Costa Rica, Finland, Hungary, Iceland, Korea, Portugal, Singapore, South Africa, Trinidad and Tobago. Hey, look, we've got an ambassador to Israel, a guy named David Friedman, who supports settlements. We've got an ambassador to the Court of St. James, the UK, Robert Wood Johnson. Let's see. We don't have an ambassador to Syria.
Ooh. Who would want it?
We do not have an ambassador to Cuba. And the this is just lists from the Department of State. There's a good 10 or 15 we don't have from the Department of Agriculture. 21 positions empty, unnominated in the Department of Commerce. And this is a little surprising, Ron. We're lacking 53 nominations in the DOD. And again, these aren't just, you know, low-level schmucks. We have no nominee for the Deputy Secretary of Defense, no nominee for the General Counsel, no nominee for the Inspector General. They're such a pain in the ass anyway.
That
one can stay empty for a while, I guess, as far as they're concerned. No Undersecretary, no Comptroller. No Undersecretary for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. No Undersecretary for Policy, for Intelligence, for Legislative Affairs, for Reserve Affairs. They at least bothered to announce a Secretary of the Air Force. They announced a Secretary of the Army, but the withdrawal is listed as pending in this article. No Secretary of the Army, no Undersecretary of the Army, no General Counsel of the Army.
Do they bother to mention whether the incumbents are still in the job?
No, they don't. This is a Washington. This is a Washington Post article.
I thought you were going to say the Washington Examiner.
No, this is the Washington Post, updated February 22nd.
Okay. By the way, you want to get Canadians foaming at the mouth?
Yeah. Regardless of because then they come and burn the White House.
This resurfacing, recurring, goddamn rumor that Sarah Palin is working hard to be appointed ambassador to Canada.
Jesus Christ, they will. They'll come burn the White House.
Oh. I mean, no more maple syrup. Continuous goddamn cold fronts. Got to make your own hockey pucks and hockey players. No more of ours.
And you know what's even scarier? The Canadian corporation that owns Burger King and Tim Hortons.
Yeah, buying Popeye.
Just bought Popeyes.
Yeah.
Now that's some damn leverage Canada has over us.
And another bit of leverage is that, if I remember correctly, there's a couple of brothers called the Reichman Brothers who own the big tower in London. Own damn near as much, if not more, real estate in New York City than Donald Trump. I mean, those are two.
Well, Trump doesn't own that much real estate in New York City. He owns one building.
Yeah.
The rest are mostly naming rights. The wealth of Donald Trump is one of the biggest frauds that has been perpetrated on the people of the United States and directly related to why it is we can't see his tax returns. Because fucker is broke.
Or beyond broke.
I mean, his boys just got back from Dubai, I think.
Yeah. At taxpayer expense.
Where they announced the grand opening of Trump International Golf Course Dubai. And we were on the hook for that.
Well, I think we were only on the hook for the Secret Service protection.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they stayed in the hotel or something and got comped. Is that an emolument?
Yeah. Did you ever wonder whether the Secret Service guys have sort of got a pact amongst themselves? No way I'm taking a bullet for that fat fart.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should mention that. A woman who was a member of the Secret Service got in deep shit for saying something like that back during the election cycle. She said, I've tossed this around in my mind over and over and over again, and this was before November 8th, and she said, and I've just got to say it. I understand that it may be a problem, but I got to say it. No way would I take a bullet for that son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And she got one of those unpaid vacations, or got one of those paid vacations while they do some investigating. Hey, I got more fun positions that haven't been filled.
More than the Kama Sutra?
Just about. And no emoluments.
Ooh.
Not even a candle. We at present still have no... We have no Undersecretary for Nuclear Security or Administrator for Nuclear Security in the Department of Energy.
Oh, you mean that department that Perry...
Yeah, the one where he thought he was going to be a goodwill ambassador for the oil and gas industry.
Yeah.
We also do not have an Inspector General of the Department of Energy.
Whoa, now that's important.
You would think.
Oh, yeah.
We are wanting for an Undersecretary for Science. Science.
Is that S-K-I-E-N-C-E, Science?
You're damn right it is. We don't have an Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Energy. We don't have an Assistant Secretary for Fossil Energy. We don't have a Director of the Office of Science.
I would have thought they would have filled a fossil energy position.
They're waiting for Don Blankenship to get out of prison, frankly.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Because they don't want to take Bob Murray away from his dream job of blowing up the Bears Ears National Monument. Let's see. Health and Human Services has gone begging. Homeland Security still lacks 16 positions, including an Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis.
They don't seem too eager to fill the intelligence positions, do they?
No, or any of them. I mean, they've got, let's see, there's Ben Carson, Housing and Urban Development. That's it. That's all we got. 27 positions remain open in the Department of Justice. We do not have a nominee for Solicitor General. Nobody in antitrust, nobody in national security, nobody at DEA, nobody at ATF, no assistant attorney general for civil rights, no assistant attorney general for the criminal division. Well, that might come in handy, you know, never mind. There's a reason for that.
They may not rush to fill that civil rights position.
No director of the Office on Violence Against Women.
How about OMB?
Let's see. I don't. Who are they under? That's congressional. That's congressional.
Yeah. But
that was a trick question there. I see what you did.
I thought the head of it was appointed though.
I haven't seen it in this list. 19 positions unfilled at transportation. And remember how he talked about, we were going to take such beautiful care of our veterans, fabulous care, tremendous care. There's no Deputy Secretary of Veterans Affairs. There's no General Counsel, no Assistant Secretary for Congressional and Legislative Affairs, no Undersecretary for Memorial Affairs, no Undersecretary for Health, no Undersecretary for Benefits, no Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology, no Assistant Secretary for Policy and Planning. It's a big goose egg for Chairman, Board of Veterans Appeals, and no Chief Financial Officer.
But you know what they did do for veterans? Didn't get any publicity, although they, Lord knows they tried. They announced that effective November the 11th, 2017, all past veterans who have an honorable discharge can order overpriced goods from online military exchanges.
Wow. Can they get a free MAGA hat?
I went on and looked and I'm going, really? You want that much?
Let's see. The Treasury has 27 positions they haven't bothered to nominate for yet. I wonder if they even know these positions are theirs to nominate. We don't have an Assistant Secretary for Terrorist Financing nominated.
It's up a wet dream.
Well, you know, if you don't have anybody in those offices, then it makes it a whole lot easier to not have anybody in those offices give you any hell. I go back to Catch-22, which I referenced a little bit ago. You remember how Major was always out unless he was in, and if he was in, that meant he was out?
It's been years since I've read that book.
Trust me on it. Well, this is that. Executive office. Oh, there's OMB. Yeah, we got OMB here. My bad. Director OMB has been confirmed. That's Mick Mulvaney.
Wonder which brokerage he worked for.
Oh, come on. It's got to be Goldman Sachs or nothing.
I'll track it down.
Executive Office of the President, U.S. Trade Rep, no.
Really?
No Chairman, Council rep? Of Economic Advisors, no. Deputy Director of Management, OMB, no.
No Trade Rep?
No Trade
who
Rep.
Who's going to negotiate all these wonderful new tweaked versions of NAFTA that the orange asshole keeps promoting?
Well, I mean, who's going to make Mexico build that big, beautiful wall? Who's going to tell China to quit it?
Yeah. Going to tell Russia to leave Ukraine and Crimea.
We still don't have a statutory inspector general or a general counsel at CIA. We do not have an assistant administrator for water at EPA.
God damn, Bob, I'm going to need another drink if you keep doing this.
Hell, I'm only at N. Director of National Intelligence, no principal deputy director, no general counsel, no director of the National Counterterrorism Center. Three positions open as unnominated at SBA. Members of the Securities and Exchange Commission.
But isn't small business the heartbeat of America?
Well, that's what I thought. And no federal co-chairman for the Appalachian Regional Commission?
Well, no surprise there.
How about this?
12, right?
No nominee, no board member nominated for the Defense Nuclear Facilities Safety Board. Sleep tight tonight, America.
Don't you worry about that particulate stuff. Oh, by the way, you were talking earlier about particulates. I just wanted to note that I built my own overhead dust collection system in my workshop, mostly sawdust, some metal. But I go down to 0.3 in my friggin' workshop. And they still don't have 1.0 or 2.5 regulations?
No, there are standards for PM10, which is 1.0, and PM2.5, which is actually
0.25. Okay. 0.25, 0.3. Yeah, okay. That's getting fairly fine.
Yeah. But, you know, why bother? Nobody at National Science Foundation, nobody at NASA, nobody at the National Security Agency, nobody at National Transportation Safety Board.
Whoa, back up. Nobody at NSA?
One position, Inspector General, no nominee.
Ooh. I mean, the boys at the Crystal Palace got to be getting a little bit nervous, I would think.
They can't be happy.
No.
Railroad Retirement Board? Social Security Administration? Well, hell, those jobs may not exist in 6 months.
How about the post office?
Let's see. There, I just passed that. Hold on. I had it. Minus two positions at Federal Reserve. Minus three positions at FERC. I saw the postal board there.
Yeah, but FERC is very important because that's one of the chief focal points for tracking money.
No, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking financial.
No, that would be your... Nobody at Office of Personnel Management. Postal Regulatory Commission. Three positions open. Chairman, Commissioner, and Commissioner. Not nominated. And the last on the United States Election Assistance Commission. Nobody. And finally, the last one on the list. And I think I'm going to bookmark this story because they do update it. The United States International Trade Commission, four positions, chairman, commissioner, commissioner, and commissioner.
No. What happens to all the hearings that are before that board at the moment? Do the existing commissioners continue the post until...
No, they stay in limbo.
I mean, there's a bunch of things that... International Trade Commission gets involved with.
Absolutely.
One of which, from a Canadian standpoint, is softwood lumber, of which we've got a shit ton of softwood lumber up here.
Yeah.
And we send it down to the U.S. And the U.S. lumber industry, having devastated their forest well before we've devastated ours, are dealing with second growth and third growth lumber, which doesn't grade as high. And since most of the Canadian lumber comes off of land that is owned by the provinces, the arguments always are, well, the Canadian provinces are subsidizing it because they don't charge enough. Well, it's up to the provinces to determine how much to charge, but they don't charge enough to where the Canadian lumber producers have to jack up their prices so that they're higher than selling it in the U.S., including shipping. So that's the kind of thing the ITC deals with. Sounds kind of mundane, but, you know, there's several
But out of little mundanities like that, great conflicts arise.
Yes. You want to put a tax on tea?
There you go. Oh, and by the way, we've got some competition going for a quick cowbell here in Australia. Robert says Sarah Palin as the Canadian ambassador. Come on, she'll only be there for half a term.
And but then, she can see Alaska from here.
We got a cowbell for James too. Suggesting Melania for Solicitor General. Wait a minute. That's a double ringer. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't she always have had a manager? Like with orange hair?
Yeah. Oh, I found out a little. I found out who Mick Mulvaney is. He is the, born 1967, he is the former member of the House of Representatives for the 5th Congressional District. Fifth Congressional District of South Carolina, Stan.
Oh, he and Eric must be friends.
Oh, I'm sure they play golf and handball and all kinds of shit and have brunch and shrimp and grits and all, whatever.
Yeah.
He was in office for about 6 years. Until he was nominated to run the Office of Management and Budget. He was confirmed by 51-49.
Ooh, that says a lot right there.
Yeah. I'm sure he's a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelical. Among other things, he has been accused of misleading the Lancaster County, South Carolina Council and taxpayers to provide $30 million. Now, this is the guy who's going to run the Office of Management and Budget, right?
Yeah.
He hoodooed the taxpayers and city and county council of Lancaster County out of $30 million in public funds for a real estate development. And once the funds got approved, he sold his interest in the development to a third party for a profit of a cool $7 million.
That's real money in South Carolina.
That's some Jed Clampett walking around money, yes.
Sort of gives you a warm feeling in your heart.
He's a big fan of the Paul Ryan budget, if that tells you anything.
The eat, shit, and die budget?
And was an early supporter of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, for president. So that'd mean he's probably got some of that up by your own bootstrapsism going for him, that libertarian foolishness.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you how guilty I feel sometimes for living in Canada?
I wouldn't manifest a lot of guilt if I were you, Ron. I'd feel more like, it would probably come across as taunting on this program, but I think I'd get up and put my ice skates on and go out and do a couple of triple sow cows of joyous celebration every day.
Well, that'd be a little hard right now. A week ago, we had 6-foot snowbanks and a 20-foot wide street on my little cul-de-sac. Today, coming home, the street is about 30 feet wide. Two cars can easily pass without pulling into someone's driveway momentarily. And the snowbanks are down to about 3 feet. We've had some days in the 50s, and we got one coming up on the weekend. They're talking about getting up in the 60s. And then it's going to drop to -3 and freezing rain with ice pellets. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
You are not supposed to get sleet in February in freaking Ottawa.
No, we're supposed to get up to our sphincters snow in February in Ottawa. This has been a bizarre damned winter.
Well, the jonquils are up down here.
Oh.
No really? Kidding. The ramps are up.
They're up already. I was going to say the ramps won't be far behind.
And if we don't... And the funny thing
I think a ramps is a March thing.
Well, ramps are supposed to be the first tonic of spring.
Yeah.
Here's what we're looking at. Tomorrow, and I don't know, I'm only kidding, but looking at what we've got tomorrow, it's going to be real hard to crawl in behind the microphone at 6 p.m. We've got sunny skies and 77 degrees tomorrow, Ron.
You're killing me.
With a low of 57. And then this out. So by Saturday, it's rainy with a high of 57 and a low of 26.
Ooh.
And that's as cold as it gets for the rest of the week. So 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, 1. March is going to come in like a lamb with a high of 66 and a low of 41. Then it's a high of 49, low of 34, high of 50, low of 32, high of 58, low of 39. That's a week.
And pretty much what we're looking forward to here.
No, but go ahead and take a good swig, because a week from tomorrow, it's snow and a high of 50.
Can you spell schizophrenia, Bob?
No, but I think I'm going to be able to play with it in the yard. The following day, a week from Saturday, is sunny and 58. The tulips will be up soon. And my favorite thing of spring, the red buds, will be blooming any minute now. But the thing is, with this bizarreness, we are almost guaranteed a Mother's Day blizzard.
Yep. Yeah.
Or not. Maybe we've passed that much debated tipping point, and we're just in, you know, we're past the point where the shit has hit the fan and it's just spraying.
So what's the recommended old timers date for planting gardens?
Round here, you wait till Mother's Day.
Which is?
What, second Sunday in May?
Yeah. It's pretty much the same up here. You don't do it until the third weekend in May. And we've had frost in Ottawa every single month of the year. Hard to believe, but. Anyway, I think I'm just about gone through my entire checklist of inane things to talk about.
If not the bottle of Reverend Craig.
Oh no, I haven't even started there. I saved him for special, you know, Reverend Craig Stiletto. Reverend Craig Stiletto, and always so far I've gone to Reverend Craig. He has solved my problem.
Bless his sacred, sainted name.
Yeah.
Well, Ron, take care of yourself. Good talking to you this week.
I'm sure you have some intelligent people willing to call in. So
they all are.
Oh. By the way, the marvelous coherent Diane posted an interesting piece today. I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't, and I haven't heard from Diane in a while. And we need to hear from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan.
We do. She is having moments of chewing nails and spitting razor blades, but she put up a piece today that I'm not a fan of Walmart, but, and started discussing the schism that's developing between the business community and Trump. Namely, Walmart's going, you want to raise tariffs? We're the biggest clothing retailer in North America. And you're going to raise the tariffs? Our poor people aren't going to be able to buy from us anymore. So,
all those $5 faded glory polo shirts. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Well,
I bought an entire. I'm ashamed to admit this. Okay, but I have to. I mean, look, we are who we are, and we are where we are. I had an entire wardrobe of Hawaiian shirts last summer from Walmart. It's all I wore. Because I love Hawaiian shirts. You know, aloha shirts.
Yep. We have a guy at the office that does nothing but wear Hawaiian shorts, and combat boots. Did I mention he's a software genius?
I was going to say, I would not screw with that guy any way, shape, form, or fashion.
No, 25 years of electronic warfare in the military. He knows his way.
That guy
around.
Can probably make flames come out of your shower head.
Yeah, probably. But
anyway. And by the way, you mentioned feeling kind of bad about being Canadian sometimes. You've got an offer from Marty. Tell Ron if he wishes he can gain his penance by sponsoring us all to migrate to and gain residency status in Canada. I think you're going to have to add on to the house, Ron.
Unfortunately, it's not as easy back, you know, before asshole Harper came in, the last PM before the current guy. By the way, did you see what I put up a few days ago about Trudeau helping a guy in a wheelchair down an escalator?
Yeah, I saw that. That was actually pretty cool. He's winning the comparative PR battle with Mar-a-Lago Musa with Benito Cheeto rather handily, I would say.
And I love that picture of him looking at Trump in the Oval Office when they were shaking hands. The photographer captured it just as
The one where he's looking at his hand like, oh, is that the one you do the grabbing with? I don't think so.
Yeah. You want me to pull what? In any event, I will turn you over to probably more factified and righteous folk. So I'll call in again sometime, Bob.
Well, I sure do hope you will. And if you talk to Diane, tell her to give us a holler.
Oh, I'll do that.
Please do.
You take care.
You know, the family worries when we don't hear from the kinfolk.
Yeah. All I can say is that she is at least as articulate as I've ever seen her. And
I just kind of wondered if maybe after November the 8th, she was sort of hunkered down and afraid that, you know, some sort of four-letter Tourette's would, because she's very well behaved, very, very sharp, very articulate, and would probably hate to ruin her image by just letting go of a string of four-letter Anglo-Saxonisms.
Yeah. She is very active academically right at the moment, so that's taking up a lot of her time. But when she does have time to post, they're worth reading.
Well, I got to double check and put her on my show me her post first list.
Yeah.
All right, Ron. Have yourself a wonderful evening.
You take care, sir.
I'm gonna try.
Okay.
Cheers.
Happy farting, Bob.
I'm a trying.
Okay.
Later.
Bye.
The one, the only, Ron. In the far, far frozen north. So let's take a little break. Lines are open if you want to jump into the conversation. You are mightily welcome so to do. What's this? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep. A graphic coming in from Carol Baker. A short history of U.S. presidents. Cracker, 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 cracker. All the way up to 43 crackers, then an Oreo, and then a Cheeto. And you know what's funny? One of the things that'll send my gut into paroxysms is if I screw up and sit down and rip on a bag of Cheetos. There's probably some sort of meaning there. So, and again, we started out with $260 to raise. We still have $260 to raise at 3 minutes past the hour. And so there's going to be a little break here. And we'll see what happens in the interim, see who wants to conversate. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the horn. And me, I'm just little old harmless Bob Kincaid. Hey, Tim, you listening? It was this or Brian Adams. I mean, you know, Canada. Well, I mean, you know, or Gordon Lightfoot.
More.
Oh, yeah, everybody's a DJ. Ron's over there. He could have used K.D. Lang. And Ron in Raleigh says, you could have chosen Celine Dion. Oh, go to blazes, both of you, Rons. I got some Justin Bieber queued up right here just for you. Just keep it up. Just keep it up. That's all I'm saying. You just keep it up. Don't mess with me. By the way, Ron also pointing out under the subject line, fucking A, how many incompetent know-nothings do you think Chito Benito knows he can nominate for these positions? He's already scraping the bottom of the barrel. And that's part of the problem. They're having a hard time filling these positions because there ain't a hell of a lot of people that want anything to do. I mean, I guess he could nominate David Duke and Richard Spencer, and I'm pretty sure the Republican Senate would confirm them. Well, yes, there was always Neil Young, too. I actually considered after the gold rush. If I'd given it more thought, though, as far as Rush was concerned, given the nature of the conversation, I probably should have gone with Fly By Night, don't you think? What's this? What is this? It's not coming through. The Canadian Gadsden flag? It's a yellow field with the silhouette of a beaver that says, mind your own damn business. Nice. Nicely done. So, If we're working from the standpoint of things, just a minute. If we're working from the standpoint of things we wouldn't be talking about right now, if people had gotten a simple 2 + 2 = right back in November, here's one. Goes back a few days. You know, I presume that most of you have seen, and I posted some of it on my Facebook page yesterday, the news out of the Ochetti Sekwin camp at Standing Rock. The flames there were moving, to say the least, but guess what else? Good old Trans Canada filed an application a week ago today
with a state agency in Nebraska for root approval. Mm-hmm. And Russ Girling, TransCanada's president and CEO, said, "This application has been shaped by direct on-the-ground input from Nebraskans. The thousands of Nebraskans we have met over the last 8 years understand the value of this project, and what it means to the state. As we've said consistently, safety and a respect for the environment remain our key priorities. We're listening and acting on what we've learned, but we're not going to we're not going to live anywhere near our pipeline, just so you know, they will also, they've gotten permission from 90% of the Nebraska landowners that the Keystone XL would affect. They do not have the permission from the millions of human beings whose water stands to be ruined by spills that affect the Ogallala Aquifer. The other 10%, they'll just steal it through eminent domain, don't you know? Big thanks going out to Ralph's. Ralph's kicked in $25 to take us down to 235 to go. Les had helped out earlier in the day, taking us down to the 260. And I've got a note from Joan in Tallahassee. Joan says, "I'll send $50 for sure, but I'll double it if the Horn Family Community Congregation coughs up another $100 before the end of the program. That is, that's 47 minutes from now. So if we can raise $100, Joan will double it. So thank you, Joan. Thank you very kindly for that incentive, and hopefully it will be met in short order. I really, really hope so that we don't have a big old whopping hole to fill in for Friday on the front porch. 70 degrees. How am I not supposed to play hooky? Oh, well, the blender's broken. It's not like I can fire up the margarita machine and put on some Jimmy Buffett and go find one of my Hawaiian shirts anyhow. I'll be here. Don't you worry." Ron informs me, by the way, Canada's building a fence. We're putting up a 5,000-kilometer privacy hedge. Yeah, just to be on the safe side. Hey, look, fresh back from the wild high altitudes of what would that be? Eastern California, Mammoth. It's Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, gorgeous. How you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
I'm feeling slightly better.
Did you love? Yeah, I got to say, I'm impressed. The idea that California has people who will just wait for you and put your chains on for you. That is some mighty fine socialism you got going on out there.
So I gather that's not something that happens in your neck of the woods?
Oh, hell no! I mean, we don't even have one of those courtesy patrol trucks sitting at the top of the mountain going, "Good luck!" Shit, we can't even afford salt anymore. And that's not a joke.
See, you know, this is one of those things, yet another reason why I can't even fathom leaving California.
Don't!
Because I was just, like the other day, did I tell you that I went to the Department of Rehabilitation? Because, you know, I'm a nutbag, right? And so, and they're going to pay for, only are they going to pay for me to finish getting my bachelor's, but after I've worked for 90 days, as a counselor, they're going to pay for me to get my master's.
Can't argue with that.
Could you imagine that in West Virginia there, Bob? Or Louisiana Stan? Or
no, 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 we don't, no, no, I'm sorry, no.
Or Georgia Stan?
No, those aren't the kind of jobs we want in West Virginia, Tracy. We want good paying jobs in the coal industry. And they ain't never coming back.
Did you hear that we had a couple of representatives that are doing a bill to have California just say fuck it all and just get single payer health care in the state of California there?
And you know what? California may be able to maybe big enough to be able to pull it off. I hope they can.
Mm-hmm.
You think it's going to go anywhere?
I think it is.
Well, we're just now getting around to debating why it is that sick people in West Virginia can't have medical marijuana.
Oh, yeah, well, I just read that they're trying to crack down on legal marijuana now, too, huh?
Yeah, that's coming, according to Spicy. Expect greater enforcement of marijuana laws under Trump.
Yeah.
So, just to review, Tracy, if the federal government wants to not protect trans kids in school when they go to the bathroom, that's states' rights. But it's
right.
Not states' rights if a state wants to legalize the use of a relatively benign weed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's states' rights and then there's states' rights. And some states' rights is righter than other states' rights. We've all read Animal Farm, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, then, as again, I keep I remind, you know, the Horn family, if it was up to the certain states, I'd still be a slave and not able to vote.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, Barack Obama only got to be 3/5 of a president.
Mm-hmm. Remember, he wasn't able to pick a Supreme Court nominee. Well, no, he got to pick him. He just wasn't able to have him confirmed. So, yeah, 3/5 of a president. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. And you know, frankly, it pisses me off that I presume you're listening, so I presume you heard that long list of offices that have not been filled in.
Yeah, I actually tuned in to the very beginning of the show.
So the DOJ though says that they're going to have the resources to come after states that have legalized recreational weed.
Right. You don't even.
I guess Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is just going to try all the cases.
Right.
Because, I mean, after all, when he was busy lying like a cheap rug, I mean, testifying before the Senate, he said he tried all them civil rights cases,
mm-hmm.
Of which he tried not a single one.
Not a one. He's going to be so tired. He's going to be like, you know, 45 and go on vacation every weekend.
Yeah, he's gone again, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is he vacationing this weekend?
I think so. Or is it next weekend? Whenever it is.
Yeah.
I don't get... well, I mean, what is it now that we have paid for him and his family's vacation has cost us more than the Obamas have been in a year.
In a year, yes.
And he's just been in the presidency. Hasn't even been in the presidency for 100 days. And his approval rating has already dropped to 38%.
Well, depending on 30, I was actually, I know, and I'll get an email. Why do you do it to yourself, Bob? Because the alternative is watching CNN and the alternative is watching Today Show and the alternative is watching Good Morning America. I tuned into Morning Joke. And there I heard someone, I think it was that Meekum fellow, say, well, I think that 38% might be a little bit low. It might be more like 44%.
Oh, whatever, bitches.
Well, but see, he was saying that because the next thing out of his mouth, well, I remember, you know, Barack Obama until the end of his presidency hardly ever got up over 50%. I mean, so thereby saying, well, you know, Barack Obama was just as awful as Donald Trump.
Right.
Yeah, I know. What does that man have to do? What does that orange man have to do for America to wake up and go, wow, he's a shitbird? I mean, it's pretty obvious that about 27% of America realizes he is, but the 48% of, you know, the 48%, the lampreys who couldn't get off their asses and go vote, and the 25.4% or whatever that actually voted for the fucker, what does he have to do to them, do you think?
I wake up daily. And this is on my mind daily, if not hourly. What do you have to do? It's like, I think somebody said,
I got the answer.
Relationship. What's the answer?
Turn black.
Please tell me.
Turn black.
Yeah. I think that's about the only thing. And, or,
I mean, if somebody just tackled him and started rubbing at that orange real good and rubbed all the orange off of him, and it turned out he was really Jesse Jackson. Oh, then they'd suddenly understand that, we're in trouble.
Well, it's like what happened is, and forgive, because, you know, remember, I didn't really start paying attention to politics until 2008. I didn't even realize that McCain ran against Bush in 2000 and that that Bush's political machine had flyers out that McCain had a black child. Where was that in North Carolina? Was it South Carolina or North Carolina that they did the flyers?
I'll get email.
And then they had WPK at Bob Jones University. So, you know, these are those things. I mean, like I said, I didn't know about this. I saw a clip on Facebook about this that Rachel Maddow was talking about. How the Republic, it's always been about race for the Republican Party. And I was just like, holy shit. And like you said, you know, if it comes out somewhere that, you know, he has a black love child or something, it would have to be racial. It would have to be that Trump has a black love child, that he's really black, something.
Because if it turned out like something out of Oh Brother Where Art Thou, and they lifted the hood off and it was him under the Klan hood, well hell, you know, a whole bunch of America would go, yeah, hot damn, making America great again, one burning cross at a time.
Right. That wouldn't do it. It would have to be something, like you said, he would have to be black. He would have to be black. Like you said, they would have to rub off the orange. And he would have to be black.
Because there's a bunch of people in this country, so-called left and white wing both, who wouldn't be bothered a nickel's worth if it turned out that he was actually a Boris Badenov with an orange paint job.
Right. I mean, it wouldn't matter. I mean, we're talking about a man that said, grab her by the pussy. And as long as I have a
yeah, and you know what? There are women out there with T-shirts that say, I wish he'd grab mine.
Mm-hmm. Anatole, that's so sweet. He loves me. And tell me, I'm thinking, Anatole, thank you for saying you love the sound of my voice. That is so sweet. Thank you.
Anatole's good people.
Yes, that's so sweet. But this is what we have. We have a man that no matter, and it's so true. What did he say? He can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, so, you know, and nothing would happen. And he's right. So I mean, it does. I mean, we know he's colluding with Russians. We know that he's a shitbird. We know that he has lied about not one, not two, but three. Terrorist attacks. We know that he's a malignant narcissist. We know that he is a sociopath and
maybe suffering from tertiary neurosyphilis.
Yes, we know all these things.
I got one more thing here via Graham.
I got another name for him. Harbinaro Hitler. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
Habanero Hitler. Yep.
Habanero Hitler. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Yeah, you can have a little jingle for that. Graham in Australia said, if certain portions of his base were to find out that he had some Jewish heritage in him, that might work.
No. Because it's okay, because remember...
Wouldn't you love to sneak a little DNA sample off to Ancestry.com and find out that he was, you know, 12% sub-Saharan African and 13% Jewish and 17% Arabic and...
I think they could forgive the Jew because, you know, Ivanka's married to one. They might forget the Jew. They won't forget the Black. They might forget the Jew.
No. The Richard Spencer wing. Oh no, that would get them right head up.
You think?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You know, the Jews are almost white, but that's right. They're desecrating Jewish cemeteries.
Not white enough to keep their cemeteries from getting desecrated, they ain't.
That's right. That's right. But remember, but it depends. Remember, because you know the right wing evangelical fundamentalist Christians, they all hopped up about the Jews returning back to Israel so they get their Armageddon off.
That exactly. Got to have that perfect red heifer. And they got to get all the tools and the gem cracks and the candelabrums and stuff and for temple service. And they got to blow away the Dome of the Rock, and they got to rebuild the temple. And they got a lot of work to do.
So, like I said, the Jew, you might still be able to get he still might be okay with the Jews.
Well, no. I mean, some might.
Like I said,
but there's
he
a
might
whole
still get a pass.
But remember, Milo and Steve Bannon declared that alt-right, alt-white is fully half of the base of the Republican Party. And they ain't going to be okay with that.
Oh, so Spencer got him and Milo Yana, I'm a pedophile, got dismissed or distant dismissed from CPAC.
Yeah, they escorted Richard Spencer out today before anybody could punch him in the face.
Now, why Milo Yana got dismissed. What did Spencer do?
Well, I mean, he was just he was drawing reporters like bees to a cup of honey water.
Mm-hmm.
And CPAC couldn't stand that because it would have made him the big old Nazi face of the Republican Party, you know, which he is,
but they were
trying to negate that. So, you know, there you go.
So they didn't want him
sucking all the Nazi oxygen out of the room.
They didn't want people to realize who he is, what the party is.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
They wanted him out of there before he could have a breakout group meeting where he hollered, you know, "Hail Trump, hail victory, hail our people" with the stiff arm salute, because you know he wouldn't have been able to resist given the opportunity.
No. Oh, so did you hear about the off duty LAPD officer that shot at a young Black kid out here in Anaheim?
Yeah. What the hell? I saw the video.
So yeah, I know he's on
a paid vacation now.
I wrote a paper not long ago about the issues of, you know, the police brutalities. My issue with it is these damn paid vacations. To me, this is my issue. It's like, okay, stop with the paid vacation. I know now that we have, you know, Jefferson Davis, Beauregard, Sessions III as our attorney general, there will never, ever, 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 ever be, you know, a special prosecutor. But these people should not be investigated by their own district attorneys because, as you know, like out here in L.A., Jackie Lacey is not going to do shit. So my thing is it should automatically be prosecuted as a hate crime. It should not be prosecuted by anybody that's within their department, and they should no longer get paid vacation. They should automatically be suspended without pay until further investigation.
Well, the problem, at least as I understand it, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Tracy, The problem with suspending without pay is that it creates a presumption of guilt.
I don't give a fuck.
Now, I think
that's awful.
No, no, no.
That's
but I mean, I wonder if you could. Okay, so you suspend him without pay, and then if he's exonerated,
you give him his back pay.
You give him his back pay with interest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's fair, right?
Well, I mean, I think that would get people thinking long and hard about just going around shooting motherfuckers. What do you think?
You would hope it would have a deterrent effect. I mean, that video was crazy. One, dude is not in uniform.
Nope.
Two, he's grabbing some kid and dragging the kid around. Okay, now, you've probably followed this more closely than I have, and I'm glad you brought it up. And don't hate me for asking the following question, okay?
I could never hate you, Bob.
What went on before somebody turned on the camera? Why did the guy grab the kid?
I don't know.
I mean, if the answer is because he's an asshole, that's the answer. But, I mean, did I see it right? There was some sort of a hedge there?
Looks like there was a hedge.
Like a property line or something like that?
It looked like there was a hedge. Who, like I said, I don't know. But the bottom line is, he was a grown-ass man.
True. With a gun in his pants.
With his gun in his pants. And I can't imagine that he really felt that he was in fear of his life. You're a trained police officer. So what could possibly have happened that you felt that, you know, and like I said, I don't know all the details. I just know that he felt that he had, you know, I'm just tired of white people feeling that their only alternative is to pull a gun on black people. That, you know, that he felt he couldn't talk to him. That is like, I see black kids, my automatic response is to pull a gun.
And there's not a lot of help in the news reports. This is from yesterday. It's from ABC News. And here's what it says. Anaheim police... okay, the encounter began in front of the officer's Anaheim home, stemming from ongoing issues with juveniles walking across his property.
Not trying to break into his property. I mean, if I got pissed off every time somebody
you cannot use. I'm pretty damn sure that in California it is not legal to use deadly force in defense of property. One of the few states where, well, maybe not few anymore, used to be the only state in the union where you could use deadly force in defense of property. Was Texas, and that's what made being a repo man in Texas a lot more interesting than, say, in the other 49 states. But the video mm-hmm. makes it pretty clear. He reaches across the hedge to grab a kid. Now, according to Anaheim police, and this may completely fall apart, and it kind of reminds me of something that happened here in West Virginia. Gerald will remember it. We had a conversation about it a few months back. Anaheim police said a 13-year-old boy allegedly threatened to shoot the officer, who then attempted to detain the boy until police arrived, sparking a physical confrontation. The boy's mother disputes that, saying her son said he was going to sue, not shoot, the officer. Okay, let's play fun with language for a moment. Tempers flaring. I'm going to sue you. I'm going to shoot you.
I
can believe Mama.
I'm going to go with the former that he said, I'm going to sue your ass.
Yeah. And what's interesting is the cop is on one piece of property and then tries to drag the kid, onto his property.
Mm-hmm.
Through the hedge.
So what side of the property was he on? What property?
Well, it starts out on the other side of the hedge. The cop's over there, the kid's over there, then somebody comes in. Comes in, knocks the cop down, and the cop tries to drag the 13-year-old boy through the hedge.
Mhm, which is probably his side of the property.
Right, because they, you know, they still teach that stuff. You know, if he gets off your property, drag him back on your property and shoot him again.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, the cop is one of these typical shaven-headed, for all we know, roid raging, you never know.
And by the way,
but he's walking around his own house
in Anaheim.
He's walking around his own house, his own yard, with a gun in the waistband of his pants.
Mm-hmm. My question is, if you LAPD, why are you living in Orange in the OC?
Oh, see, that's a geography lesson with which I was not familiar.
Yes, you know, Anaheim's in Orange County. You could find a house in L.A. So you got.
Does an off-duty L.A. cop in Orange County get to carry a concealed weapon?
That I do not know, but I've often wondered. You know, because this is one of those things. A lot of times, and this is a lot of times LAPD. They don't live in L.A. They live in Santa Clarita. They live in Simi Valley. They live in Ventura County. They live in Orange County. Most of the times, they don't live in L.A. because, you know, niggas. Oh, did I say that?
Jesus. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they live everywhere else but where they patrol because, you know, they don't want to be around white people. I mean, they don't want to be around black people. They're so funny because a little while back, Jan and I go to Disneyland quite often because we have season passes, and I didn't realize this. I was in Anaheim, and there's a Roscoe's, and apparently I did not know this, but there's quite a large black community in Anaheim. Did not know this. I've never even seen that many black people in Anaheim. And so I think it's funny that these white people moved to Anaheim to get away from black people, and there's quite a few black people living in Anaheim. I think it's hilarious.
Well, let me ask another question. Now, mm-hmm. I live in the wilds of you know, almost level west by Trump, Virginia, Stan.
I'm so sorry.
And we've got, I mean, it has its good days and its bad days. But we've got a law about discharging a firearm, and it doesn't say unless you're hunting deer or unless you're shooting a varmint or there's no unlesses. We got a law against discharging a firearm within 500 feet of a dwelling.
Oh, really?
Now, this off-duty cop is pretty clearly discharging a firearm. Now you tell me in Orange County.
Behind the orange curtain.
Within 50 feet of a dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know Orange County's a Republican paradise.
Oh, but yes.
But the question remains... Is it okay just to willy-nilly discharge firearms within a striking distance of a dwelling?
I seriously doubt it, because regardless of whether Orange County is, you know, like you said, a Republican paradise, you're still in California. And we do have some pretty strict gun control laws.
You know, there is some dialogue in the video in which the kid says, he tried to hit me in my nuts. That's like a little pussy move, punch a kid in the nuts. And the off-duty cop says, because you've been resisting this whole time.
First of all,
and he said, no, I wasn't. You tackled me first. I didn't do anything to hurt you. All I said was respect the girl because you said get out of my property. And then the cop, you said you were going to try to shoot me. Kid says, I didn't say that. Why are you lying? I said, I'm going to sue you. And then the man lays hands on the kid. Look, let's just see if we can get the audio here, shall we?
Let's.
No, we're not going to get it there. That's KTLA, and they're going to have their person doing a stand-up. Hold on here.
And the next question, the gun just went off, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that what we're supposed to understand?
Yep.
And the gun went off. Okay, here we go. God, this goes on for a while, so.
It does.
This was a sure enough fracas. And interestingly enough, it starts out on a sidewalk.
In Anaheim, California.
The protest gun? You said, Tracy?
I said that the protest got so bad that it blocked the entrance to Disneyland.
Damn. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we can pick up the audio here.
Let him go.
Whole bunch of kids. So what? They were walking home from school or something? I mean, it's Tuesday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're just walking home from school.
That's one of the things I hate about these videos is you never get the before until somebody goes, hey, shit, I better video this.
But it's like, I mean, I don't know what kind of, if you live in a neighborhood or what, but it's like kids walk across your yard. That's just what kids do.
Oh, hell yeah. When I was growing up, yeah. Shoot, we didn't even have sidewalks. It was either walk in a yard or walk on the road.
Walk in the street.
And you'd cut across, take shortcuts through people's backyards. I mean, it was kind of like toward the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, where he's running through all kinds of people's yards. But there's no off-duty cop there to pistol whip and manhandle Ferris Bueller now, is there?
No, because Ferris Bueller's a white boy.
Bueller. So at this point in time, the guy has dragged the kid into some yard. I don't know if it's his or whose. But he's still objecting. And secondarily, what kind of dumbass is this guy that he doesn't know that he's being videoed?
Being filmed. Come on now. It's not like back in the day with Rodney King, where the chances are you being videoed with Neil and Nunn, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Here's a little dialogue we can actually hear, I think. Did we catch that?
No, I didn't hear what he said.
White dude, off-duty cop started it, and by insulting a little girl.
Ah.
Listen carefully. I'm going to run up. It's a little annoying, but I'm going to run up the audio a little more.
I always said, look, respect the girl, because you said, get out of my property, you piece of cunt.
Oh.
He called the little girl a cunt.
This is a grown-ass man.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. Are you right? I said I'm going to shoot you.
It's California. The kid said he'd sue him. Everybody sues everybody in California, right?
Yep.
It's almost, I mean, you know, not quite like Florida, but still. Okay, a little more. Now, he's still dragging him across somebody's yard. But you can now see that the hedge is in view.
And if the whole thing is about trespassing against somebody on somebody's yard, he's already trespassed on two different yards. The cop has. So, just, you know.
Get off me! Get your fucking hands off me then! That's what I thought! You can't even get your hands off me! Get off me!
They already called the cop!
Call them on them!
Get off me! They're grabbing a minor!
Like 30-something, I'm only like 13!
All of the victims in one shot!
Let me go, you're stretching on my shirt! You know then, let me go! Why are you freaking trying to get me? You hit me, you're not passing me on the ground! I understand if you're a cop, but you're not a cop.
Yeah.
What the hell do you think you are? Attacking me, you're supposed to hurt me? You think that I'm going to shoot you, and I really did. I said I'm going to kill you. Can't you hear? Then why are you grabbing onto me still?
Okay, we're at the hedge now. The guy has committed a battery, arguably, a battery, against a minor.
Against a minor.
If he had a problem with the kid.
Cop, not even in his jurisdiction,
right.
For one thing.
Right. And he continues to hold on to the kid. And this is the important part about the kid. The kid's not resisting. He's going where the guy drags him. And he's not swinging at him. He's not fighting him. He's not doing anything except asking him to let him go.
You back up. You're the one who's right here.
And that's when another kid comes in and knocks him through the hedge. Another kid jumps over the hedge, at which point the cop reaches for his gun in his waistband. And then all the kids start running. They think the kid may have been shot.
Right.
Because here's the thing. It's not like it's pretty clear. It's not like the gun's up in the air and he's firing a warning shot.
No.
Which would have been bullshit anyway.
What goes up does come back down.
Yeah, but the firearm is actually pointed in a position where it could reasonably have been expected to have struck someone. He's got the gun pointed horizontally. He could have easily murdered that child or any number of the other children. No wonder there were protests. Hell's bells, there should have been protests. This guy's out of control.
My question is, why did he even have a gun in his waistband?
Well, there's that, and there's the question of, what's the response time of the Anaheim PD?
Right.
Because the cops had already been called, according to voices on the video, and what we just heard was 2 minutes and 33 seconds, Tracy.
Right.
And how long ago was it last year, that the cop in Texas manhandled the little girl in the bikini?
At the pool party?
Yeah.
These people, and here's the sad part, unfortunately, we know probably nothing's going to happen to this guy. Thank God.
Nothing will happen to him.
The happy note is that boy is not going to be a hashtag.
He is alive. And interestingly, the cops did show up, Tracy. I don't know if you know this or not. The cops did show up.
But they arrested the kid.
And arrested the kid. But not the guy who discharged a firearm.
The firearm.
Into a group of children.
Who were doing nothing.
They were doing something. They were trying to walk home from school. You know, where we want them to be, school. And the sad thing is that the recording wasn't on when the cop called the little girl that word.
We just get along, get over it. We'll be fine. And Trump is going to be okay. 45 is cool. And you guys are just crybabies.
Well, no. I mean, we heard it on this program 2 nights ago. We're going to be fine, Bob. We're going to be fine.
Yeah, okay. Fuck you. Not you, but, you know.
The answer, as Graham points out in Australia, the answer to why did he have a gun in the waistband of his pants? Because he had to mow the lawn in America. It's Orange County. He doesn't mow his own grass. Does he?
Right. I don't mow my lawn. I have a gardener. And speaking of gardener, Hispanic people in general. When we went to, when we were leaving, we left Mammoth early because a snowstorm hit and all this started crazy snow. And Jan was like, man, it's really busy. Why is it? And she's like, all these empty seats. I said, well, because the majority of the people who work here are immigrants and they're scared shitless that any moment now there's going to be a whole bunch of people here from ICE. And yes, we are a sanctuary state. It doesn't keep them from coming in and doing a raid.
Nope, it doesn't. Tracy, dear, I got to get out of here so I can end the program on time for a change.
Oh, my God, is it that late already?
It's 6.5 minutes till, so, I'm going to wrap up.
You got, because you went over last night, I heard.
Yeah, by about a minute or so. I'm a bad person.
You're terrible, and you should be punished.
Stop that. I know about your past.
What I used to do?
Don't say that.
All right,
there was a little too much professionalism in that statement. Damn it!
That was bad. I told you, $500 an hour I used to make. Come on. Hey, I could do a fundraiser. What can I say?
Oh my! Stop! Right now! Oh God, Tracy, I'm glad going up the mountain in the snow is interesting enough. Going down it is an even bigger party. You were wise for leaving when you did, but I'm glad you're home safely from being a black person on the white mountain.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed myself. But anyway, you take care of yourself. You guys contribute if you can.
Yes,
good
indeed.
Night, Bob. Have a wonderful rest of the evening.
See you, Tracy. Bye now. After something as grim and serious as that, it's good to hear Tracy laugh at the end of the program. And so, thank you, James. James got us started on Joan's challenge that happened back about 4:15. Got 5 minutes to go, and we need to raise $90. In which case, Joan will double it, and we will actually be pretty close to finish with fundraising for the evening. So, thank you very kindly, Joan, for making the kind offer. And well, if we could knock that down, it would be wonderful. $90, 5 minutes. All kidding aside, I'll be here for Friday on the front porch tomorrow. 77 degrees in Appalachia in February. That's going to have to be some kind of record, I think. You can make a margarita in a shaker, too. Maybe I'll ask the boss for special permission. No. Quit that. Stop that. That's no good. Can't do that. I'll be here. I hope you will as well. And I hope you'll be participating in the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch on the Horn. Thanks to all of our volunteer staff. Thank you to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, having to pop out of the chat room for a minute, deputized utility moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you, Steve. Thanks to John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to our news ninjas. And thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, acact.org. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Good night, y'all.